Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is August 14th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. The Dow is down 800 points today. That is the topic of today's podcast, a continuation of the past couple of weeks with extreme market volatility that we anticipate, given our volatility model, that this will continue. This will continue to be the norm, not necessarily a decline of 800 points, a loss of 3% per day, but we are going to see volatility, swings of 1% or greater or less. That is what we are anticipating. That's what we've been discussing here for the past few months. Given our volatility model, there is a lot of catching up that needs to take place, especially in regards to the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average. For the NASDAQ, for the Russell 2000, the small cap index, it just has to be a continuation of its current volatility that we have thus far experienced throughout the year. This is not a law, this is not a hard and fast rule that these markets must follow what this volatility model has been showing us, but it has been quite reliable over the past 20 years worth of data. You back test it, it works. Will this time be different? It could be, but we are not saying that here. We are sticking with the volatility model. We are anticipating extreme volatility for the remainder of this year. So the S&P lost 86 points. The Dow was down 800. The NASDAQ lost 242. And the Russell 2000 lost 43 points for today. All of these indices were down 3% or just about 3%. That's a huge loss for any single day. The Dow Jones Transports and the New York Stock Exchange were also down 3% or nearly 3% in and of themselves. Deutsche Bank, because we've been talking about it here, lost another 7% today and is now trading at $6.69. We talked briefly about Deutsche Bank again the other day just to say, look, because we've had previous conversations about Deutsche Bank and the situation that they find themselves in, but they are not alone, not by any stretch of the imagination. It's many, many banks in Europe. It's banks in Japan that we are now seeing, and it is banks in China. But focusing on Deutsche Bank, they're in a lot of trouble, folks. We know they came out with a plan just a month or two ago that they were saying, all right, you know what, we're going to cut back on some employees, which they've been doing throughout the years now. We're going to lay off another 18,000, with the bulk of them being here in the United States of America. Now, they're going to do this over the course of the next couple few years. Ain't going to happen. We say it's not going to make it that long. It just can't. They're not going to kick the can down the road that long. We are anticipating a shortage in liquidity that is just going to seize the markets. And Deutsche Bank could prove to be front and center, but it's just Deutsche Bank could prove to be the poster child of what is about to happen. Doesn't mean that it's going to necessarily be them, but they are definitely going to be in the mix. I am anticipating other major corporations, banks, non-financials to go down when this next recession hits. Now, there's no 100% certainty in this. This is just what I am anticipating because of the multitude of issues that face us. If you were to take a moment and just draw a line down the middle of a sheet of paper, and on one side write the headwinds, and on one side write the tailwinds, it's no contest. It's no contest. The headwinds that we are facing, not just as the United States of America, but as a global economy, dwarf any type of tailwind. Any type of tailwind that we have would come out of nowhere. It would come out of nowhere. It would almost be a miracle, because you would have to have some sort of major resolution to Brexit. You would have to have some sort of major resolution to the liquidity shortage that we are in the midst of, and that is going to get nasty. You're going to have central banks all do an about face, and I mean not tiptoe back into the water and cutting interest rates, which they're already doing, but they are going to really have to go nuclear, if you will, and just start printing money. They'd almost have to give it out to everybody. And this is not a solution. This is not a solution. This is not a long-term, stable solution. But that's what they would have to do to sort of stabilize these markets and stave off all of these headwinds that we're facing. It's highly unlikely that they're going to do that, especially anytime soon. They're going to tiptoe back into the water, the Federal Reserve, 25 basis point cut. What are we going to get when they come back in September? Probably another 25 basis point cut, maybe 50, but who knows? Because you don't know what Thunder Thumbs Donald Trump is going to tweet and move markets, because he did that yesterday and markets rallied. Now today they're down, okay? One of the main drivers, at least what we're told, is because there was an inversion on the yield curve. The difference between the 10-year Treasury and the 2-year Treasury is now negative. This is the first time this has happened since 2007. We've been talking about this. There's an article on the Capital News. This may have been the first article that I've written talking about the Federal Reserve. And then another one, there's a couple articles on the Capital News that you want to check out on this matter. You want to check out the one where I question Chairman Jay Powell of the Federal Reserve, and then another one that says, why do we fear recessions? And we talk about the yield curve and what it means. Because what we're hearing on the mainstream media, and I said this would happen, is people are going to come out and they're going to say, this time's different. Because that's what they always say. Because they're peddling a product. They're trying to keep you in the market. They make money when you stay in the market, not when you leave the market. So they're just going to say, well, this time's different. The Federal Reserve's been embarking on zero interest rate policy for a near decade. Interest rates are still extremely low. There's nothing to be concerned about here. It was quantitative easing. The ECB has negative interest rates. Japan has negative interest rates. This time's different. This time is not different. This time is going to be worse. That's the only difference. Not that the yield inversion is not going to forecast a recession. That's going to happen. That's coming because recessions have not been outlawed. This is the business cycle. It doesn't matter who's sitting in the Oval Office. The only thing that matters now, to some extent, unfortunately, is the fact that we have a president who is setting policy by tweet. This is dangerous. This sets a dangerous precedent. He wants to communicate certain things. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But when it comes to policy, there is a little bit of an issue, I believe. How well thought out is it? You're making a statement with, I don't even know what it is, 140 characters, whatever it is now, 140, 280 characters. I mean, is that really well thought out? It leaves a lot more questions than it answers. So I would really have to advise the president to stop this. I have advised the president to stop this, not that I'm anybody that he's going to listen to. But nevertheless, I am an American citizen. He does work for me. He works for you as well. So voice your opinion. I just don't think it's good for the country because we have some tweets that the president made today that I think may be well-intentioned on the president's part, but I don't know how well they're going to be received by the other party, and that other party happens to be China. We'll get to that shortly. Oil obviously went down a little bit today on now demand concerns. I mean, it's day-to-day. You get a tweet, you get a yield curve inversion. You don't know what's going to happen. Oil, we have WTI trading at $54.85 a barrel. Brent, the international metric, is trading at $59.20 a barrel. I still anticipate both of these prices to head south. Gold is trading at $1,516 an ounce, catching a bid today, obviously, on the flight to safety given the sell-off in the equity space. Same thing with silver, also catching a bid, now trading at $17.34. Again, folks, I remind you, it is my opinion, my analysis, and many, many others out there as well that believe that the precious metals, gold and silver, are in the first throes of a strong multi-year bull market run. So, despite the fact that we have seen a run-up and a strong run-up over the past couple of months in these precious metals, I still believe net-net over the coming years, they are undervalued. It is also a means of further diversifying your portfolio. We know central banks are going to cut interest rates. They're already in the midst of doing it. The question becomes, how deep do they go? For how long? And then do they also embark on some sort of quantitative easing or some other PRBS name they come up with, which is just a fancy term for monetizing the debt, which just means you're printing money to pay off the debt. It's a fraud. It's a scam. You couldn't get away with it. You had a printer in your, you know, in your basement. You wanted to print a whole bunch of dollars to get rid of your debt. They found out you did that. They'd lock you up and throw away the key. But of course, for the Federal Reserve, the ECB, and many other central banks, it's perfectly legal. It's perfectly fine. This is why we have income inequality the world over, because they are sanctioned to print funny money, and then it goes into the hands of the few first. That's where it primarily stays. They buy assets with it, and there you go. It's quite simple. Don't overthink it. Don't make it overly complex, because it's not overly complex. That's what we say here on a near daily basis. End the Federal Reserve, abolish the federal income tax. You want to solve these problems? That's where you got to start. You got to starve the beast. You want to continue with this swamp running your life, interfering with your daily affairs, personal, business, and anything else? If you're tired of the military-industrial complex going all around the world, pretending to be the policeman of the world, staging overt coups in Venezuela, in Ukraine, and other countries around the world, and I'm sure we have a hand in the protests going on in Hong Kong as well, and we will get to that because that's what the tweets are about. We have the U.S. 10-year Treasury down 6% today and now yielding 1.58%. I anticipate this yield will continue to go lower. The VIX spiked 26% today and is now trading at $22.10. Another point that we have to discuss here also is the 30-year Treasury. This is the longest dated maturity that the U.S. government issues. So the 30-year bond is now yielding 2.04%. This is a record low on the 30-year bond. What this means is, give Uncle Sam your money for 30 years and all you're getting back is your principal plus 2%. That's not a good deal, folks. This is the bond market telling you that something is wrong. This is the bond market saying there is no growth in the economy. Not only the global economy, but also here in the United States of America. They are anticipating lower interest rates because that is what they are expecting Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world to do. Lower interest rates, and they are reacting. They are reacting to lower growth. The writing has been on the wall. We have been talking about it since this podcast has been on the air since February. That is the primary reason why I started this podcast in the CapitalNews.com. To educate as many people as I possibly can, to voice my opinions and sometimes frustrations with the system, but all in the hopes that I can reach as many people as possible to prepare them and to educate them, or to at least start to think differently about the paradigm in which we exist. Because this is not healthy, it is not sustainable, and it is not American, and it is most definitely not free market capitalism. It is not, any way you cut it. This is fascism, it is corporatism, with a huge side dish of socialism. And it's not getting any better. And when you have a president of the United States who comes out and wants to attack the Federal Reserve, again, I'm for abolishing the Federal Reserve. So I'm fine with the president coming out and bringing attention to the Federal Reserve and blaming them. What I don't like is the president's solutions, or quote-unquote solutions, and saying, well, you know, the problem was you cut interest rates for too long. Now, the president doesn't say this. Not anymore. He used to when he was a candidate. He used to say this. Now he doesn't. Now he says, go ahead and cut them again. Cut them. And cut them severely. Not 25 basis points. Not even 50. 100 basis points. A full 1%. Cut interest rates. Boom. Go to it. And also embark on further rounds of quantitative easing. These are not the solutions. This is the problem. This is what caused all of the malinvestment. This is what is going to cause one of the worst recessions, if not depressions, that we've ever experienced. And because it's going to be global. Because the debt is everywhere. You can't escape it. That's why the only way, if this is going to be masked over, like we did in the Great Recession and bailing out Wall Street, now it's not just Wall Street, folks, it's everybody. It's not just the Wall Street bankers. It's major, major corporations. It's mid-caps. It's small-caps. We have zombie companies walking this planet. This isn't just my opinion. This is the Bank for International Settlements, the central bank for central bankers. They are warning. They have been warning about corporate debt, corporate bond issuance, commercial and industrialized loans, leveraged loans. It's just compounding. It's $10 trillion. And a significant portion of it is junk. and a lot of it is rated triple B, which is one notch ahead of junk. And you and I both know personally, and very well, that a lot of that debt that is rated triple B is most assuredly junk. But we have a system here greasing people's palms. This is the same game that was played last time during the subprime crisis. It's the same game. You need a better ratings? You go to the ratings agency, hey, we're going to pay you to rate these bonds or anything that we're giving you to rate. You better give us a good rating. Otherwise, we're going to go somebody else. We're going to go to your competitor, and therefore, you're not going to get paid. You get the picture? Well, they got the picture 10 years ago. They're getting the picture again. So now the question comes, who blinks first? Do investors get wise to this and start pulling their money out of these funds, out of these bonds? Or do the ratings agencies come out trying to save any credibility that they might have left and say, well, you know, we have to cut a couple of them. We just have to. We have to downgrade them from triple B to junk. We just have to do it to save our own credibility. Will they do that? That becomes a very interesting question. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm an optimist. I'm hopeful that people can still do the right thing somewhere down the line here, that somebody can somewhat get religion, if you will, and say, you know what, we just have to. We just have to be honest with the markets, and what happens, happens. Because you have to understand, folks, there are institutional investors out there who own triple B bonds because they are still considered investment grade. They can own them, okay? But if they get downgraded to junk, they can no longer own them. So they are going to have to be net sellers of these bonds that get downgraded to junk status. That will cause a huge cascading effect throughout the entire corporate bond market. There will virtually be no buyers for anything that is junk right now because everybody's going to be trying to flock into triple Bs or higher rated bonds. There's just not going to be an appetite for this because right now you have a lot of people who are still being pushed further and further out onto the risk curve because where else do you go if you're trying to chase yield? But now we're starting to see an unwinding of this, and that's why you have the yield curve inversion. You're starting to see a flight to safety in government bonds, not just U.S. Treasuries, but government bonds the world over, particularly the German Bund. I mean, we have negative yielding rates in Europe and Asia. Will they be coming to a theater near you here in the United States of America? I will not be surprised if we have negative rates in this country in the not-too-distant future. This is the problem with central planning. This is the problem with central banks. This is the problem with politicians who don't know what the hell they're doing. And we have not had any sort of shortage of that here in the United States or anywhere else in the world for that matter. The corruption, the nepotism, the big business joint at the hip with big government is a crime in and of itself. That is the corporatism. That is the fascism that exists. But here in the United States, we also have a huge side dish of socialism because we have a huge, and getting bigger by the day, welfare state. We have 10,000 people a day reaching the age of 65. This will continue until 2029 or 2030. We talk about this in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing. This is all about trends and demographics. This is a huge shift. A lot of these individuals, if they even have equities or any type of investments in the markets, they are going to become net sellers because they are going to need any type of cash that they have. And in the midst of a recession or another slowdown, these baby boomers are going to want their money because they don't have that much as it is. We are in the midst of a retirement crisis. We are in the first throes of it. Once we have another slowdown and or recession, and I am anticipating it's going to be a recession, it ain't going to be pretty because then these baby boomers are most definitely going to want any cash they have anywhere they can get it. And that's after they may have already lost 10%, 20%, 30%, who knows? Because these markets can move very fast before you can get a handle on what's going on. That's what we witnessed back in December of 2018. We saw a huge market drop-off in the course of a month. And what were most people told? Well, markets go up, they go down, just stay the course. That's fine if you're somebody in your 20s or 30s and you have a long time horizon, but how did anybody know that there was going to be a huge V-shaped recovery, and it would continue somewhat consolidating for what we've been experiencing for the past 8 months. Who would have accurately predicted that? Not too many. Not too many. So you have to ask yourself, and it's a very reasonable question to ask yourself, do you think if that event should happen again, where you get another 10% down, or another 15% down, or another 20% down, that baby boomers and other people are going to say, oh yeah, keep me in this market, baby. That's what I'm looking for. This is the type of volatility I love as I'm about to enter retirement. I don't think so. It's too close. It's too close. It's too fresh in the memory. Again, I could be wrong, but I anticipate people are going to say, I'm not going to do this again. I can't stomach this. This is my life savings here. I can't take a 20% hit. I want to retire. Wives and husbands, they want to retire. They want to travel. They want to spend time with their grandkids. They want to move to another state, maybe another country. They want the cash. They want to enjoy their final years together. Now, of course, that could be a long time, too, and hopefully it is for many people. But, you know, you see what I'm getting at here? This will become a self-feeding downward spiral that will get out of hand so quick, there virtually is no solution at this juncture because we have no leadership. None. Nowhere on this planet do we have leadership. None. We have finger pointing. We have the blame game. We have Twitter battles, tweet battles, whatever you want to call them. This is absurd. This is absurd. We have central planning all over the world, and this is what you get. This is what happens. This is exactly what happens. I could be wrong in all of this. The picture I'm painting is not a bright or pretty one at all, but this is the correction that needs to happen to cleanse the system. It's going to be amazing how many companies will go out of business during this next recession, depression, because these are the zombie companies. So a lot of companies and a lot of people who you think are savvy businessmen and women, they're going to go bye-bye. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is what's going to happen because they're not going to be able to go to the bank to get any sort of funding. Just not going to happen. Not at all. We also had the president come out and tweet today the crazy inverted yield curve. I mean, come on. Come on, Mr. President. Can you give us a little bit more than that? Because, of course, he was playing the blame game and blaming the Federal Reserve. And again, we're fine with that, but the solution we are not fine with. We are not fine with. And this is his problem. This is his dancing himself out of the box he's placed himself in trying to put the Federal Reserve and others into a box. This is a poor characteristic of the president, as far as I'm concerned, that shows a poor leadership style or a lack of leadership, if you will. Because he will take credit for anything that appears to be good, but if it's something bad, it's somebody else's fault. It's somebody else's fault. And again, the analogy I use is imagine you're a soldier going into battle, and you win the battle, and the general takes all the credit for winning the battle. But if you had lost the battle, the general is going to blame you and all the other soldiers. I don't think anybody would want to fight for that general, and they'd most definitely say that general is not a good leader. And I hope we don't have any generals out there. But we have a president who behaves in that way, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all, because yesterday's podcast, we were talking about the president's credibility, and it's fine if Donald Trump, the president and CEO of the Trump Organization, wants to throw his credibility to the wind. I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less. But if he's going to throw credibility to the wind as the president of the United States, I have a big problem with that, because that is our office. That is our office. So that sets up huge implications and consequences downstream. So according to the president, we have a crazy inverted yield curve. I mean, I laughed when I saw this come across because I have Yahoo Finance. I have some news feeds that come across, and it's stated, crazy inverted yield curve, exclaims the president. I'm like, this is Dr. Seuss. I mean, I literally laughed out loud because this is insanity. And I love Dr. Seuss. This is no disrespect to Dr. Seuss, but that's exactly what it sounded like to me. Crazy inverted yield curve, the president exclaims. I mean, how are you going to make this stuff up? But the president also took to Twitter later this evening, praising President Xi as a great leader who wants to quickly and humanely solve the Hong Kong problem. The president ended that post with personal meeting without clarifying whether he was suggesting a summit with Xi. In a tweet sent shortly before that, Trump wrote that, quote, "Of course China wants to make a trade deal. Let them work humanely with Hong Kong first." He also said that his decision to hold off on imposing new tariffs on China until December, quote, "actually helps China more than us, but will be reciprocated. Millions of jobs are being lost in China to other non-tariffed countries." Can't make this stuff up. Continues. You know, there was another good point, because this was part of an article. You know, I mean, the White House said no immediate comment to the tweets, which is no surprise. They're making attempts of, you know, the yield curve, again, heightening fears of recession. We have no official statement on this. So it's just tweets. It's policy by tweet. I mean, the White House, his own staff can't keep up with them. And that's a problem. That is a problem. And then another thing that this article points out, which is so true, and it states, attempting to carry out diplomacy over social media, however, carries risks. Even suggesting a link between the trade dispute and the Hong Kong unrest will feed suspicions in Beijing that the U.S. is seeking to leverage China's domestic crisis as part of broader strategy to check its rise in power, of course, they're talking about. China has in recent weeks attempted to paint the U.S. as a, quote, "black hand behind the protests," with a front page commentary in the Communist Party's daily newspaper saying Thursday that the goal of such forces was fomenting a, quote, "color revolution." And of course, that would be a direct implication to the United States, because the color revolutions, the orange revolution in Ukraine and all that stuff, where the United States was heavily involved in that. So, you know, I told you folks the other day, or would you be surprised if the United States was involved in these protests? And do you think the Chinese are that dumb that they wouldn't figure this out, or at least have suspicions that the United States is involved in these protests? And now we have Donald Trump by tweet, stating some sort of policy here. Well, you know, we're going to continue the negotiations. Everything's going fine. But you handle this humanely first in Hong Kong, and then maybe we can continue with the trade deal. So what does this do from the Chinese perspective? Because remember, folks, it's my opinion here at the Capital News that on both sides of the Pacific here, it is the quote-unquote strong men who have the ear of the respective presidents, okay? So now we have Donald Trump pretty much calling out President Xi of China, telling him how to handle a situation. Okay, if you're a hardliner tough guy, you're going to tell and probably advise President Xi, if he's not already thinking this anyway, you're not going to tell us how to run our affairs. You're just not going to do it. Because I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, that Donald Trump wouldn't like it if President Xi took to Twitter or anything else for that matter and told Donald Trump how to handle a situation. And I guarantee you that Peter Navarro, who has Donald Trump's ear, would not take it lightly either. So you get the drift, you get what's going on here. You want to make these comments via Twitter. You want to suggest perhaps a personal meeting between yourself, being Donald Trump, and President Xi of China. You know, if you can resolve this issue, I'm all for it. Those of you who have been with me know that this podcast is primarily about peace and prosperity, American ideals, free market capitalism, and education. That's what this is about. So if the president can bring about peace and prosperity, amen, more power to him. But the manner in which he does these things, I think, inflicts more wounds than it solves problems. That's what we have been seeing. How many more times are we going to believe the boy who cries wolf? That we are about to have a deal, that now these tariffs, this situation is now helping China. Why does he want to help China? Doesn't he want to help the United States? It's all about the winning. I mean, it's one thing after the other. You know, China is not our problem. It's just the Federal Reserve. I thought for years we've been told that it's China. China's the problem. Since he's been president, and before he's been president. For the past 30 years, I thought China was the problem. Now China's not the problem, it's just the Federal Reserve. You can't make heads or tails of this stuff. And the thing that concerns me is, even if somehow China and the United States come to some sort of agreement, they come to some sort of trade deal, what's actually going to be in it? And what type of credibility is there going to be in the deal? Because who's going to believe the Chinese? And who's going to believe Donald Trump? These are serious questions. I would have a very difficult time believing either of them. because you don't know if Donald Trump is going to get upset with something, if the Chinese are going to follow through with something, or not quickly enough, because we were just told we're in no hurry for a trade deal. We're in no hurry. We just want the right deal. We want the best deal for the United States, and it has to be better for the United States than it is for China. Then, boom, overnight, you get another tweet, another policy tweet, and now there's going to be tariffs on China because they're not moving fast enough. So we're in no hurry. They're not moving fast enough. Boom, more tariffs. Now we got the news yesterday, which caused a stock market rally. Oh, we're going to delay some of the tariffs. And now he is dictating to China how they are to handle a situation. It's all over the place. I don't know if this is by design or he doesn't know what he's doing. Could be both. It could be both. But it's maddening on a near daily basis to look out to see what the president happens to be saying on a multitude of issues. This is beyond the scope. This is beyond the power of the president of the United States, as far as I'm concerned, especially when it comes to the blatant, outright market manipulation. He's obsessed with the stock market. Peter Navarro, his right-hand man on these matters, is obsessed with the stock market. It's blaming everybody else, but taking credit for anything that appears to be good. That's poor leadership, or it's no leadership, whatever you want to say. I'm fine with either. Peter Navarro's got to go. I can't stand looking at this guy. I can't stand listening to him. I don't even want to hear his name, to be perfectly honest with you. But I'm going to continue to say it because the American people have to understand what's going on. The tariff story that we are being told is simply not true. It's not how tariffs work. China has not been devaluing their currency enough to offset the impact of the tariffs. There is a host of other countries whereby their currencies have devalued, or the U.S. dollar has appreciated against those respective currencies by a hell of a lot more than what the yuan has depreciated against the U.S. dollar. We have not called those countries currency manipulators. I am not here defending China by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't like what we're doing either. It's the pot calling the kettle black. Russia is not allowed to meddle in our elections, but we can stage outright overt coups in Venezuela, and that's not a problem. I mean, the hypocrisy is, it's disgusting. It's in your face, and Americans just take it because we're used to it. This is part of the problem. This is what needs to be remedied. Unfortunately, there is no draining of the swamp. It's getting bigger, it's getting out of control, and we're calling for more debt. More debt, higher debt ceiling, trillion-dollar deficits as far as the eye can see. And now we want the Federal Reserve, according to the president, to cut interest rates even further, which is more debt, more inflation, and more quantitative easing, which is more debt and more inflation. To solve the problem of a lot of debt and a lot of debt and a lot of debt and a lot of debt. Does it make sense? No, it doesn't. But that's the world we live in. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Can a tweet save us? Will the yield curve invert, even get even deeper into negative territory? Will there be some strong earnings reports coming out? I don't know. But keep a smile on your face. Stay vigilant, stay diversified, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kuraitis. Godspeed.